Hello, I'm Robert Kelly, and today on Record All Monsters, The Magic Serpent, Fairy Tales, and the Challenges of Collecting Niche Media. Fun fact, I love folk and fairy tales. They're my favorite literary genre. I have so many books, both of and about folk and fairy tales from around the world that they have their own dedicated freestanding bookshelf in our home. And as you've probably guessed from this show's mere existence, I also love monster movies. So, back in November of 2016, while I was driving home listening to Kyle Yount's Kaiju Cast, looking forward to the Bill Miller's chopped barbecue sandwiches I'd just picked up, the movie they were discussing sounded like a dream come true. It was called The Magic Serpent, and was adapted from a Japanese folktale called The Tale of Gallant Jelaya. Its story sounded like a cross between Clash of the Titans and Star Wars, set in feudal Japan, and I just had to find and watch this movie. That would prove much more difficult than I could have possibly anticipated. Sure, as a lifelong Godzilla fan, I knew it was challenging to find these movies sometimes. I knew that the same people who held the American distribution rights now weren't the same people who held them when the movies were initially released. Some had entered the public domain in this country, or their ownership was so vague that they may as well have been in the public domain. I expected to find it on some no-name distributor's creature double feature DVD, in a dollar movie bin at Walgreens or CVS, packaged with one of AIP's TV versions of Gamera or Monster from a Prehistoric Planet. Would that I were so lucky. As of this writing, it has been just shy of 4 years since I heard that episode of Kaiju Cast, and lo, these many years have I searched for a quality version to set myself before. There was a difficult-to-watch version of AIP's dub on YouTube with very poor picture quality, and another version that was much better-looking but unsubbed and undubbed. On Amazon and eBay, even the VHS went for more than I was willing to, or sometimes able to, pay. What was a poor boy to do? Well, he could start a podcast talking about monster movies and put the Magic Serpent in the lineup so that he can tell himself that he has to spend that money, because he's scheduled to talk about the movie. So here I am, with an imported DVD with English subtitles, watching The Magic Serpent and eating kettle corn. My own hero's journey at an end. But what challenges await on the horizon? There is one that has felled me already. The movie I sought to view was a double feature with The Magic Serpent that was easily available not that long ago, but is now as hard to find as Godzilla 1985. Daimajin. Even a used copy of this trilogy, all released in 1966, just after The Magic Serpent, and a few years ago, is ridiculously expensive. And a few years ago, Mill Creek put out a Blu-ray set that I foolishly never picked up while it was just around $15. These films were made by Daiei, the same studio responsible for the Gamera films, and unfortunately, that's all I can really tell you, because I haven't seen them. I intended to watch The Magic Serpent as a double feature with Daimajin, using them as a point and counterpoint about giant monsters in the context of fantasy films, almost as an extension of the ideas in Mothra, but alas, it was not to be. So we'll look at this episode as a stand-in for this little tributary the genre briefly took for a year in the mid-60s, at the start of the second kaiju boom. 1966 saw the theatrical release of 7 giant monster movies, as well as the premieres of Eiji Tsuburaya's TV projects Ultra Q and Ultra Man, and his child-focused monster show, Friendly Monster Busca. The next year would see another 5 theatrically released Japanese movies, including 2 from major studios Nikatsu and Sochiku, and a South Korean giant monster movie to boot. Kaiju ruled on TV too, as Tsuburaya's third Ultra series, Ultra 7, debuted just 10 days before my favorite tokusatsu TV show, Johnny Sacco and His Flying Robot, known simply as Giant Robo in Japan. We'll be riding this high through to the beginning of the next season, and it's hard not to look ahead with excitement and a little trepidation at what's to come. For now, I'm happy to finally get to watch this movie, which was everything I hoped it would be. Even if the monster action is minimal, it's probably more than there was in our last episode's movie, even if it's not as good. The suits do look pretty nice if highly stylized, and I don't have a problem with that. Of course, I recommend this movie, if you can find it.
And I have to go to my grandmother, who is waiting for me.
No, don't go.
She must, as I must return to the master's grave.
Ikazukamaru, please stay. We all want you to take Ogata's throne back.
I renounce it. It's so lonely to be at peace again. Koshirota, Osaki, both of you can do much more than I. It is your land. Go and plant in the valleys and fields. You are the real lords.
Hello, I'm Robert Kelly. Welcome back to Record All Monsters. We are here today with, of course, as always, my wonderful wife and producer, Courtney.
Hi.
And a first-time guest. You may have heard her already if we've done the Ultraman and Busca Toku TV episode out at this point. And you've also definitely heard her referenced, as she helps me with a lot of stuff on this show, Anri Hata.
Yay. Hi.
So welcome to the show officially, Anri.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And just to start off with, I wanted to have you read what the DVD cover for this movie says. This DVD was obtained through interesting means. It is, all the writing on it is in Japanese, and Anri's going to read a little bit of the poster for us.
Okay, so it says, the big toad fires, and big dragons spill the water, big spire just spill the poison stuff, and big eagle eats human.
And that,
yeah,
that's an accurate depiction of the last 10 minutes of this movie?
Yeah, so it tells you everything there.
Yeah.
Like,
that was very quick stuff.
So the movie we watched today was released in the U.S. as The Magic Serpent. It's Japanese title. What does it say on the actual cover there?
It says, Kaiju Daikessen. The English translation is Battle of the Dragons.
Okay. It was released in the U.S. in 1970 by American International Television as The Magic Serpent, which is how I first heard of it. And I had a lot of fun with this. Anri, what did you think?
It was interesting. It was fun. Like, I don't know. It was like everything in a pot.
Mm-hmm. You got monsters fighting. You got samurai.
Yeah.
You got ninjas.
and little Roman scene there.
Yeah.
And all the father and daughter drama.
So I have here with me my big book of Japanese giant monster movies by John LeMay, who's been on the show. I talk about it a lot because I'm very proud of it. I've been trying to give a rundown of like the stats of the movies, mm-hmm. and it's something I forget to do a lot of the time. So I have this book for that. Thanks, John LeMay. Here we go. Grand Duel and Magic is apparently Toei's new preferred international title for the film. It's directed by Tetsuya Yamauchi. Special effects by Motoya Washio. Screenplay by Masuro Igami. Music, which I liked the music a lot. It was fun music. By Toshiaki Tsushima. And starred Matsukata Hiroki as Jiraiya. Mm-hmm. And Ryotaro Otomo as Orochimaru. Mm. And did I do any of those badly?
No, you're pretty good.
All right, yay! Henri has helped me a lot with pronunciation over the course of writing and recording this show. No, a lot. You helped me a lot with it, so me not stumbling over any of that is entirely thanks to you. But, so, this is based off the folktale, The Tale of Gallant Jiraiya, that's what it's called. I don't know how to say that in Japanese. It's based off that folktale. It was partly the inspiration for the Naruto manga and anime. But aside from all that, Henri, tell us a little bit about how how you felt about the movie, mm-hmm. and two, kind of your relationship over time to these kind of stories. You studied kind of this literature.
Yeah, it's... it's a little different. Like my major was international studies, mm-hmm. and I picked classical Japanese because I was studying English really hard at the time, mm-hmm. and I wanted to do something not in English. I picked the class, and the class was doing all the like Japanese old folk tales, studying in English, mm-hmm. and so. It's not exactly what we like. I didn't study the exactly same thing that we watch right now. Mm-hmm. But I kind of have an idea. And my grandma used to watch that kind of show a lot. Old samurai and mm-hmm. A samurai helps the girl and. Yes. Kill the bad guy, mm-hmm. happy ending, that kind of stuff. So I watch with her a lot. Mm-hmm. And sorry, what was the first question?
What did you think of the movie?
That's an important question. I forgot. So that was very fun. I was not expecting samurai and kaijus collaborate together. But it was considered the year mm-hmm. this show was made. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
All the it's compared to nowadays, it's nothing good, but it's impressive how they made it.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's head was chopped off.
Yeah.
And the body was just walking and just head was talking separately. It's a weird a golden ring was going around.
Yes, the ring. Guy. Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
It's like animation sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was probably done with an optical effect. So this movie was produced by Toei.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a TV studio primarily,
mm-hmm.
I believe. And this is a feature film they did to kind of cash in on the kaiju craze that was beginning and was starting to touch TV with Ultra Q
mm-hmm.
at this time. And the Godzilla movies and the Gamera movies. And the next year, a bunch more Japanese studios, including Nikatsu and Sochiku, would put out giant monster movies. Mm-hmm. So Toei kind of beat them to the punch here.
Yeah.
But anyway, you recognized the lead actor from this. You recognized his name.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on...
Yeah, so he's very famous actor in Japan. Mm-hmm. He does lots of like samurai TV shows. Mm-hmm. Like my grandparents' age loves him. Okay. Like, oh, you're from this TV show, in this TV show. And yeah, he's very famous for those. And I forgot which one he did, but he did very famous TV show and he was the main character.
Mm-hmm.
Think we saw that little, you know, the actors,
yeah, the lactobiter
things, and he has all that like a cherry blossom tattoos all over mm-hmm. his shoulder. Cool. Yeah, I think it's Toyama Kinjiro. I'm not sure about this.
Okay.
You might want to cut it. But yeah, so he's very famous. And he was really young, so I was not recognized, of course, but I didn't recognize. But yeah, he's a really good actor, I think.
Oh, yeah. We were commenting on some of the acting. The version we watched, again, because this was obtained through interesting means, I won't elaborate. it is in Japanese with English subtitles, and... even through another, for me and Courtney, through another language, we could tell some of the acting was pretty wooden, and some of it was much better. Mm. But the little kid at the very beginning of the movie just...
Yeah, that was horrible. No, best friend.
Like, just basically reading the line. Like,
yeah, without any emotions.
Yeah, it's like... Your whole castle where you lived is on fire.
Yeah.
And,
like, oh, the castle is on fire.
Now, Courtney, you love Star Wars.
Yeah.
And this movie, to me, was very reminiscent of some Star Wars stuff. Do you think this was probably an inspiration for George Lucas?
Well, we already know that he's super inspired by samurai stories.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely the last fight at the end was very, it's over, Anakin, I have the high ground.
Well, because this movie's from 1966 in Japan, but it wasn't released in the U.S. until 1970. So I just wonder if that was enough time for him to...
Yeah. Well, maybe he'd seen some shows and stuff, too.
Mm-hmm. So, Henri, did you have any other thoughts before we move on to the game?
Oh, what about that story?
Oh, yes, the story you were telling us. There's a scene in this movie where young Jiraiya helps a farmer with his cart. And since they're all looking for him, since his father is the dead king and he's gonna come back and reclaim it or whatever, the farmer who he helps saves him by pretending to be his father-in-law and beating the crap out of him. as your father-in-law does. Like, Courtney, your dad just mercilessly rips on... No. But Henri, you were telling us that there's something from Japanese...
Yeah, so there's a very historical famous story mm-hmm. about Yoshitsune and Benkei.
Mm-hmm.
So Yoshitsune is like military commander or like some kind of like high rank. And Benkei is basically his bodyguard.
Mm-hmm.
So they were traveling together trying to hide from Yoshitsune's brother, who's trying to kill Yoshitsune.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they pretend they're not the farmers, but like travelers or whatever, to go through that gate. But by the time they reach it to the gate, all the like gatekeepers
mm-hmm.
were informed that Yoshitsune is escaping from
mm-hmm.
Yoritomo, and find the Yoshitsune as soon as you can. And they started to talk about, oh, he looks like Yoshitsune. And at the time, Benkei and Yoshitsune were pretending Benkei is the main guy, right, and Yoshitsune is his servant. And yeah, so they were like, you know, the servant looks like Yoshitsune, and he must be Yoshitsune, and Benkei started to, like, you know, beat him so hard, and like, because of you, you know, those guys are not letting me go through the gate, how dare you, and mm-hmm. he just, you know, beat him, same things what happened to the movie.
Yeah.
And the gatekeeper's like, okay, you don't really have to, you know, beat the poor guy. And they let him through, and after they went through the gate, Benkei apologized because he basically beat the boss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he apologized, and Yoshitsune was like, no, thanks to you we were able to go through the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
On the movie. So
yeah,
I don't know how true the story is, but it's very well known story.
It probably has like the same historical veracity as King Alfred the Great and the cakes from English folklore.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you don't know that, I'm pointing to the microphone because it's like a stand-in for the listener. King Alfred the Great was one of the first British kings. He fought back Viking invaders, and after losing a battle and being alone by himself in the woods, he ran into a peasant woman. He asked her for shelter. She said, yes, but you have to watch these cakes I'm baking. And he got distracted, watched the cakes burn, basically. And the old woman comes back and is like, what did you do? And beats him until his hood falls off and she sees that he's the king. And she's like, I'm so sorry. And he's like, oh no, I have to think about the common people. So I imagine it's like a lot of beating stories today. but I imagine it has the same kind of historical veracity. Like, maybe it happened, maybe it didn't, but it's a good story with a kind of a moral about humility or something. Or cake.
Or like George Washington.
And the cherry tree. Yeah.
Where he's like, I didn't chop it down. Or no, he says, it was me. I am not a liar.
It was me, Father. I chopped down your tree.
I think. It's been a while.
It's been a long time. But any more thoughts before we move on?
What do you think about the movie?
I really liked it. I had a lot of fun with it. I think I talk about it more in the essay, but it was fun. It was pretty much what I expected, because how I first heard about it
mm-hmm.
was through the Kaiju Cast, which was an old giant monster movie podcast by Kyle Yount, he's a pretty cool guy. And it just sounded like a lot of fun, so I looked for it for years, and I found an unsubtitled version on YouTube, and I found a very low-quality version of the American version on YouTube also, that just, I could barely hear anything. Because it was just a bad quality, like, rip from a VHS. But yeah, now that I have this DVD, it's really fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's very fairy tale.
Yes, and we're recording this not long after the Mothra episode, and I gushed about fairy tales and how they what they mean to me there. But this will be coming out much later, much later. But that's a reminder that I love fairy tales. Anyway. We are going to go ahead and go to a break. I am having a heck of a time finding promotional materials for this movie, so there may be two, like, paid ad breaks here. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. And when we get back, we're going to play the game show, Animania.
They are the legendary creatures that rose at the dawn of cinema. Monochrome ghouls that forever haunt our collective imaginations. But have you heard all of their terrifying tales? Sweep away the cobwebs. Peek into the ancient tomb. From the author of The Lost Films magazine and Jaws Unmade comes Classic Monsters Unmade, Volume 1. Over 400 100 pages chronicling the lost and unproduced motion pictures of Frankenstein, Dracula, the Mummy, and other classic monstrosities. You will witness the cursed war of Wolfman versus Dracula. Hear the return of the Phantom of the Opera and unleash the horrors contained within the brain of Frankenstein. Discover all this and more in Classic Monsters Unmade Volume 1 by John LeMay. Available now on Amazon.com.
A spine-tingling, nerve-shattering podcast featuring all your favorite monsters. You won't believe your ears when you listen to Monster Kid Radio. Hear your host, Derek M. Cook, and his ever-rotating stable of guests discuss your favorite classics and sometimes not-so-classic monster movies. Subscribe to Monster Kid Radio through iTunes or Stitcher, or visit MonsterKidRadio.net before the next weekly episode of Monster Kid Radio. Go through the archives for interviews with Sarah Karloff, Victoria Price, and Joel Hodson. Listen to discussions about movies like Creature from the Black Lagoon, Island of Terror, and King Kong. And don't forget convention coverage from Monster Bash and the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival, Classic Monsters, Modern Talk, and the Head of Rondo Hatton, only on Monster Kid Radio.
Yay? Nay. No, there is not. Though I think it would make a cool would. Little, yeah. Like, one of those little slice of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, oh, he's just a little priest solving mysteries.
Those are the ones I like to do with Anime Club, because not everybody can come to everyone, so I like to do one.
Mm-hmm. I like the TV show.
Yeah.
House of Brown.
All right. Courtney, are you keeping score?
Yes.
Okay. Question 2. Is there an anime adaptation of The Diary of Anne Frank? Anime or anime?
Anime,
there is. Yay! Produced in 1995. Annoniki, I think I'm saying that right, was made by Madhouse Incorporated, which also produced Chobits, Byblade, and the first season of One Punch Man.
Oh.
From what I understand, it's a little tone deaf, and the less said about it, the better.
Is it Beyblade?
Beyblade?
That's what the kids who come in say.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
I just remember seeing the toys at ATB when I was...
The little playing things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the tops.
Yeah, playing bottle...
Battle dreidel.
Yeah.
Okay, question 3. Is there an anime adaptation of Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House on the Prairie? Mm-hmm. Anime or anime?
Anime?
Anime!
Oh,
what? There is indeed. Sōgin no Shōjū Laura, or Prairie Girl Laura, ran from 1975 to 1976 for 26 episodes and was produced by Nippon Animation for the Tokyo Broadcasting System, the same network that originally ran Ultraman.
Oh,
sweet.
And I did verify that these existed. Like, I found clips and stuff. And I was like, okay, like, I'm not just taking the word of some, like, BuzzFeed article or something. All right. What's the score, Courtney?
1-2.
1-2. Okay. Is there an enemy at... Enemy. Is there... See, I wrote these questions. I should be able to say them. Is there an anime adaptation of Michael Bond's Paddington books?
Anime, yay!
Anime!
Nay?
There isn't an anime produced in Japan, but there was a 1989 American and British animated series from Flintstones creators Hanna-Barbera.
Oh, yeah.
Aww.
I think it would make a really good one. Like,
yeah. So, I don't know why, but I saw somehow I watched the Paddington anime.
I mean, I checked, but...
I'm probably wrong.
No, Courtney's fact-checking. That's part of her job as the producer of this show.
Or maybe just like a book design or illustration. Mm-hmm.
Again, I think that'd be a really good one, like kind of a slow, nice little just Paddington living with the Browns.
I think what I'm finding is that same show.
The 1989?
So it may have been shown in Japan, but it was not actually produced here.
All right, final question. We'll go ahead and make this one for all the beans. So, whatever the score is, doesn't matter. Is there an anime adaptation of Louisa May Alcott's Little Men, a.k.a. Joe's Boys? It was the sequel to Little Women, the book was. Anim yay for yes, or anim nay for no?
You mean nay.
There sure is, Matilda. Anim yay.
Aww.
In 1989, Fuji TV aired Nippon Animation's Tales of Little Women, which they followed up in 1993 with Little Women 2, Joe's Boys.
Little Women 2.
More little, more women.
More like more little, less women.
Too little, two women. And that ran from January to December of 1993 and ran for 40 episodes.
Aww.
Those were hard.
They were hard. The Little Women one I knew existed. I did not know they had done Joe's Boys.
I never heard of the Joe's Boys. So I'm like, I don't know. But I know
that
Little Woman, so.
Yes, I think she published it as Joe's Boys, and then later they published it as Little Men, so that it...
It matches to the Little Woman.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want to write them, if I remember correctly, but they were requested by readers so much that she was like, fine.
But yeah, they wanted to know.
I'll do it for you guys. Yeah.
They wanted to know what happened to the school she ran.
Yeah.
But that is our game show. Thank you for coming on, Henri.
Yeah, thank you for having me. That was fun.
Really happy to have you over, and we will do at some... It's either going to air... Or air. It's either going to go out... This isn't real radio. It's either going to go out the week before this episode or right after.
Okay.
So I don't know which yet, but it will happen, and we'll do that at another time. But thank you. Thank you so much for coming out. We really appreciate it, and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah. I had a great time, too. Thank you.
Read the again.
Ah!
Hello, welcome back to Record All Monsters, where we are here with our special guest. I'm going to call you our language consultant, Henri Hata.
Hi.
And we're here to play today's game, which is called Animania. So every episode, Henri, as you know, mm-hmm. we play a game show of barely tangentially related trivia.
Mm-hmm.
The less related to the actual movie, the thinner the strand that ties them together, the better. And today we have an extremely thin strand indeed.
Okay.
Today's film was based on a traditional Japanese fairy tale, The Tale of Gallant Jiraiya, which was also one of the earliest novels in the Japanese language. The novel also served as the inspiration for the manga and anime Naruto, which I have never read or seen and have no desire to read or see. That little factoid...
Why?
Because there's a lot of it.
It's very long.
That little factoid did, however, get me thinking about how many unusual anime adaptions of the canon of Western literary classics there are. And that is something I used to find endlessly amusing and still kind of do. Anyway, in our game today, which I'm calling Animania... I'll ask you if a given piece of respected English classical lit has an anime adaptation. You must tell me whether or not it does by answering anim yay for yes and anim nay for no. There are no prizes or penalties, but I will try to make you feel ashamed whether you win or lose. Okay. So, the first question. Is there an anime adaptation of G.K. Chesterton's Father Brown Mysteries?
Hi, everyone. This is Courtney with your outro. Robert has a bit of a cold right now, so I am recording the outro. Thank you again to our friend Henri. And if you want to hear more with Henri, she will be back next week with the Tokusatsu TV special. And then the week after that is Gamera versus Barugan. If you would like to reach out to us, you can search on Facebook, Record All Monsters Podcast. On Twitter, we are at Monsters Record. On Instagram, we are at recordallmonsters.pod. And on email, it's recordallmonsterspod@gmail.com. And we are very excited by the amount of people who are entering the contest. You still have time. All of the rules are on our social media. So, I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and remember, monsters are your friends.